Okay, so first of all, it's a pleasure to thank Tom for inviting me here. It's a pleasure to give this talk here. So this is, I should say, joint work with one of my PhD students who will finish his PhD fairly soon. And as Tom mentioned, I'm here not only as a speaker, but also as editor of Finance and Stochastics, so I will abuse a little of your time for a little piece of propaganda. So Finance and Stochastics has issued recently a call for papers for a special issue on computational methods in finance. You can find more details on our homepage. You just Google finance, stochastics takes you right there. I also have a few printouts of the call for papers. So if you're interested, just have a look. But that's a digression, really. That's not what I want to talk about today. I'm sure you're not so interested in that. So let's have a look at the problem I want to talk about. And the problem is the following. So what I would like to do, as the title says, I would like to construct a joint dynamic model for the following quantities. A stock, S, say, a bond, I'll do everything in discounted units, so this will have just constant price of 1, plus several call options, which I want to assume to be liquidly traded. And I want to do this in such a way that I have a good model in the following sense. Should be arbitrage free, of course. I want to have explicit joint dynamics for the stock and those liquid calls, say. And perhaps, I'm a theoretician, I'm not a practitioner, it should perhaps also be practically usable. So when you look at this, you might say, okay, no problem. So what's the difficulty here? And, well, I mean, how would you start with this? Okay, so basically you know the usual approach. You say, okay, you start with a model for the stock, and you do this for simplicity just directly under pricing measure. So take your favorite martingale for S, and then you say, okay, then... Okay, so... I don't know. No, I'm not. I don't want to do the volume. So there should be a pointer here somewhere. Oh, laser. Yes. Okay, good. Okay. Okay, so if you simply start with a simple model for the stock, you say, right, call prices, because you are already in the martingale setting, are given by these conditional expectations, and of course this is arbitrage-free because you have a martingale model. But the problem is, unless you take a very simple model for S, you don't get explicit expressions for these call prices, which means you know there are conditional expectations, but you can't write down the joint dynamics, and if you're not quite careful, it may also be difficult to get the calibration right. So that's a secondary problem, but the main problem really from my point of view is you don't really know what the dynamics are. So if I tell you, okay, I, for instance, want this or that instantaneous correlation between the stock and that call, and that correlation between that call and then that other call, you simply can't do it that way. At least, I don't know how to do it. Maybe you know. So, from my point of view, I say, okay, this maybe gives you some model, but it's not a solution to the problem I want to look at. So what do we do then? Well, and basically we've learned from the market that what one should do really is, if you want to do a thing like that, you should say, okay, step one, which assets are the tradables? So you write down dynamics for these, which means you should write down a joint model for the stock and all those calls which you want to assume as liquid tradables. So let's say the strikes in some set K and the maturities in some set T. And of course, because you have written down the dynamics, you do know the dynamics. This is elementary. And the calibration is automatic because you input the market prices as initial conditions. On the other hand, you may have a problem because you're not automatically sure that this model is arbitrage-free. So in a sense, this is simply shifting the difficulty. And if you look at this a little bit more carefully, you have two types of arbitrage restrictions. So on the one hand, you have the restrictions of the type if you use buy and hold strategies between stock and calls or several calls. Then you should have absence of static arbitrage, and if you look at this carefully, and I'll explain this in a minute, this gives you restrictions on the state space of the processes you're modeling. You know the call always lies below the stock price and above the inner value, so this gives you this kind of state space restrictions, and then you have the dynamic arbitrage restrictions, which basically say all your processes should become martingales under an equivalent change of measure, and this essentially gives you drift restrictions a la Heath-Jerome Morton. These you all know, but these are a bit tricky to handle. And to illustrate why this is so, let me look at the simplest case. So you just want a model for one stock and one call. So what are the restrictions? The dynamic restrictions are easy. The S process, the stock, and the call process C should both be martingales. Okay, but also the call price, as I told you, should always lie below the stock, above the inner value of the option. Remember, there's no interest rate, so it looks as simple as that. And of course, at the end, the call value should match the option payoff. And now what I'm asking you to do is write down a two-dimensional SDE for the processes S and C, which satisfies these conditions. And if you try, you will realize very quickly that's a mess. That's terribly complicated. So that's of course an old question, and the answer was already given in the last century. This was suggested by Kerry Lyons at the RISC conference and then worked out in more detail by one of his PhD students, by Katia Baba. And the idea, the basic idea, and this is an important idea, was to say, okay, maybe it's not a good idea to look at call and stock as basic variables. You should use a different parameterization. And so you say, okay, instead of the call price, you use its implied volatility. I think you all know what implied volatility is. It's simply that parameter you have to plug into the Black-Scholes formula to get out the desired call price. And actually, more precisely, the good parameterization in this setting is the sort of integrated implied volatility, which is this quantity here. And then if you look at this constraint that the call price is always below the stock and above the inner value, in these coordinates, this simply translates into saying this V is non-negative and less than infinity. And the final value is zero. So with this new coordinate system, you have an extremely simple state space. So what you do is you write down now an SDE model, not for the stock and the call, but for the stock and the integrated volatility. Then the static arbitrage conditions are taken care of, and then you say okay, and then you know that this process, depending on V in a precise way, must become a martingale at the same time as S. This gives you then drift restrictions, and then okay, you get some nonlinear SDEs, which are not that easy to solve, but still, this is possible. So there are examples for this simplest case. But this is, of course, really just a very simplest case, one stock, one call, nothing else. And even there, the problem is not quite simple, but it can be done, it has been done. Now, that's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is one stock and many calls. And I look at several different cases. So let's look at the simplest generalization first, where you have a fixed strike, or more generally, you say you have a fixed payoff function, but many maturities indexed by T, say. And then this goes back to Philipp Schönbucher and has been picked up later by Brace and co-authors, or by Ledois and co-authors. To construct a model here, you again use the idea of not working directly with the stock and the cold, but in a different parameterization. And the good notion here are the so-called forward implied volatilities. So what is this? Okay, you look at the integrated implied volatility, same quantity as we just had, just time to maturity multiplied by the implied volatility, and you look at the maturity derivative of that. Then, if you look at the static arbitrage constraints that you get, these simply translate into saying, okay, the V's should be non-negative. That's the same we knew before. Each implied volatility should be non-negative, and to have absence of arbitrage between different options, this, as a function of maturity, should be increasing. So that means the derivative you look at here should be non-negative. So if you parameterize by the stock and these forward implied volatilities, the maturity derivatives of the integrated implied volatility, then again you have a nice state space. And then again, as has been pointed out by Philipp Schönbucher, the dynamic arbitrage constraints essentially reduce to drift restrictions if you write down an SDE model for the stock and these forward implied vols, then you have a drift restriction there, and that's what describes your model. So that looks fine. But actually, it's not quite. Because what you have here is, you say, okay, suppose there is a model. Suppose you have these and these coefficients, then they should satisfy these drift restrictions. So let's have a closer look at the drift restrictions. So what we do is we start with a model like this. So let's say I say my stock should be positive, so I just have general drift and volatility coefficients. These are unspecified so far because I want to have this as an input to my model. Then I model my forward implied volatilities also as some kind of Ito diffusion, so some drift, some volatility, depending of course on the maturity of the option I'm modeling. And then the dynamic arbitrage constraints say, okay, this S, and not the X processes of course, but the coal prices, which are given by the Black-Scholes function applied to the stock, the strike, and the integrated squared volatility here, these should be local martingales, say, under a joint measure Q. So you do the following, you say, right, you apply Ito's formula to this thing, you write down the differentials, and then you say, okay, the drifts should all vanish by a measure transformation, and what this amounts to is saying, okay, the drift in the stock is simply the volatility times the market price of risk, you all know that. So that's the restriction on those coefficients. And then you also get the stock volatility depending on these forward implied volatilities in a certain way with some function f that I'm not writing down for the moment. And also you have a restriction here which says, okay, that drift should be some sort of function of the remaining coefficients here. And if you look at that, what's the input you can really choose? You can choose the B, that's your market price of risk. In other words, you choose the pricing measure, that's one degree of freedom, and you choose the V, so these are the vols, in a sense, so the volatilities of the forward implied volatilities, and once you've specified these coefficients, right, the sigma, the stock volatility, that's given, that's determined by the drift restrictions, and also the drift of the forward implied vols, that's also determined in terms of the V. So that's your free input parameter, exactly, basically, like you know from Heath-Jarrell-Morton, you write down the Heath-Jarrell-Morton condition, you're free to choose the volatility structure, and the rest is then determined. So, apparently, that's no problem. But if you now take a closer look, what we really want to do is the following. We say, okay, we want to choose the volatility structure, and then our model should have this structure here. So we're saying, okay, I give you a volatility structure, you give me a solution to those equations. Well, is there a solution to these equations? That's non-trivial, because these drift conditions, they're very messy. So the problem you have, these functions typically, if you look at the drift conditions, they're non-linear. You know from Heath-Jarrell-Morton, they're quadratic, for instance. Here, they're even more complicated because you also have the Black-Scholes function and its derivatives coming up. So suppose you choose V, the volatility structure, a nice Lipschitz-type sort of structure. That is okay, but you have not much control over the drift here. So how do you know there's a solution to the equation you've written down? How do you know there's a model with this given vol-vol structure? You don't know. So what's the point of having restrictions if you're not even sure there is a model which gives you this structure? Second news is, typically, you want to model, say, all maturities, or later on, all strikes. So this is not a one- or two-dimensional model. That's an infinite SDE system. And so you want to construct solutions to a thing like that. And if you look at the literature, there's simply nothing. Everybody says, okay, suppose we have a model, then we should have these drift restrictions, period. Is there a model satisfying these restrictions? Nobody knows. If you look at Schoenbuhler, he says, okay, these are the necessary conditions, but whether or not you can construct a model, it's completely open. The exception is the classical Heath-Jarrell-Morton setting, but even there, if you say, I want to specify my vol-vol as a function of the forward rate, say, the only result, which as far as I know is not even published, but hidden in Andy Morton's PhD thesis, says there exists solution in the Heath-Jarrell-Morton setting, provided this V, viewed as a function of the forward rate here, is bounded and Lipschitz. It can't get any much more restrictive than that. So, what do we do? Okay. So, this is even for the simple case of multiple maturities, if you look at the problem more closely, there are many open questions. So let's look at the next issue. Suppose we want now multiple strikes. So let's look at the other extreme. So we have a fixed maturity but strikes. Okay, the dynamic arbitrage constraints, ignore them, or I mean, they are a problem, but you know how to derive them, just usual drift restrictions. How about the static constraints? Well, the static constraints say, viewed as a function of strike, the call price function is convex, and its derivative with respect to strike lies between minus 1 and 0. So I'm asking you to write down an SDE system for S and the calls satisfying these constraints. So you're allowed to specify coefficients of dt and dw, but the solution must satisfy that. This is totally hopeless. In other words, the state space from these static constraints, this is a horror. Now, of course, the idea is to say, right, well, implied volatilities have been good to us so far. Let's try something with implied volatilities. And we've tried for a while, and we've realized it doesn't get you anywhere at all. So, if you want to solve this problem, before you can even talk about drift restrictions or talk about constructing a model or a thing like that, you have to find the good parameterization. What is the good description of the model you can actually work with? How do you choose the parameterization? So it's as fundamental as that. Okay, so this is the ideas and questions section. So let's have a look at the results, because if I didn't have any results, I wouldn't give this talk here. So. But I have also lots of questions, and maybe you have more questions, I hope so. So the key mathematical tool, which is really due to Johannes Wissel, so this is a really ingenious idea. So what he did, he said, okay, let's look first, just as a purely mathematical problem, at an SDE system of the following type. So you have processes X with some parameter theta, and you should think of this theta as typically being all maturities or all strikes. Then, okay, you model this by diffusion process, and you have coefficients A depending on the parameter and on the X variable and B. Okay, and then what you want to prove are existence and uniqueness results for infinite SDE systems like that. And what Johannes Wissel has achieved in a paper which came out last year in stochastic processes in their applications, he was able to give conditions, sufficient conditions on A and B, on these model coefficients for existence and uniqueness of a strong solution. And the assumptions he imposed were you had some Lipschitz-type conditions, but no global Lipschitz conditions, because it is way too restrictive, and it will never be satisfied in any applications to questions of that type. You can assume local Lipschitz-type conditions. And moreover, there are also sufficient conditions which ensure that this solution doesn't explode, so you really get good behavior. And it's important, as pointed out, don't assume global Lipschitz conditions. This is, you can't apply that. So this is what's driving all the results. And once you have this, and I'm not going to tell you anything about the proof, you can go on and answer some of the questions I just posed. So first of all, multiple maturities. So the SDE system we had looked something like this. So the drift of the stock has a certain functional form, and I'll show this to you just for illustration of what this kind of result really involves. And also the forward implied vols, the x's, they also have a drift with a certain structure. And the first main result gives now sufficient conditions on this volatility structure of the forward implied vols for existence and uniqueness of a solution. So maybe you think this is just mathematical curiosity, but I mean, in a way, it isn't. So if you want to write down a model, then you really would like to know, okay, maybe if I use a numerical algorithm, this converges. Even if I can't prove it, it should have a chance of converging. And if there's no model which satisfies whatever you write down, you can do numerics as long as you like. Nothing reasonable is going to come out. So at least at an intellectual level, you would like to know what you're talking about actually is not the empty set. Okay. Now, if you look at this result, this is actually not quite immediate from the general result, because the structure of the general result looks like this. You have coefficients A and B, and you can put conditions on A, the drift, and B, the vol, separately. But the applications are more complicated than that. In the applications, you're allowed to put conditions on the vol, but you're not allowed to put conditions on the drift. The drift is given to you by the requirement, absence of arbitrage, by the Heath-Jarrell-Morton type drift conditions. So you only have freedom here. You have no freedom here, which makes the problem a little bit more difficult. And in addition, you also want these things to remain non-negative, because that's the state space constraint, which tells you forward implied vols must be non-negative. Okay, but this can be done, and we have given explicit examples for such model in a paper which, okay, we wrote this in 2006. I think it will appear fairly soon now in the next issue of Mathematical Finance. And just to give you an idea of the kind of problem we're talking about here, so what I'm allowed to do is I'm allowed to choose V. And then the F and G, these are given to me from the arbitrage restrictions. What do they look like? Okay, they look something like this. Okay, so I look at the model like this. The stock has some drift mu, that's easy to determine, and some vol sigma, and the X process has some drift alpha, and the alpha is given in this form once you specify the vol. So what does the alpha look like? Okay, so I have to browse forward again a bit. And the alpha has an expression like this, so it goes over four lines. If you look at it more closely, you see, okay, the V specification, of course, comes up all over the place. The X comes up, not surprisingly. The sigma, which in turn is a function of the vol V, this comes up, and you got quantities Y, which is the log stock price coming up. You have R, which is this ratio here, and you have Z, which is the integral of X. So this is your drift condition. This is your drift term, which should be nice enough once you have specified a nice enough V. And you can see getting this under control is a non-trivial issue. Well, we managed somehow. So what happens in the multiple strike case? Now, in the multiple strike case, we don't even know yet how to write down the model in a good form, because we have these weird restrictions on the state space that, as a function of strike, this thing should be convex with derivative between minus 1 and 0. So what we do is we look at slightly strengthened arbitrage constraints, and we say, okay, we call an option price model admissible if this call price function as a function of strike is C2, is strictly convex, its derivative with respect to strike is strictly between minus 1 and 0, and the call price as the strike goes to infinity goes to 0. These are reasonable and just slightly strengthened static arbitrage constraints. If we have such a model, here's the parameterization. So we call these local implied volatilities, and they look like this. So we parameterize by X, which we call the local implied volatility corresponding to strike K, and Y, which we call price level, and we get them like that. Input is the call price process we want to model, but we don't model that, we model this X here, which is given by this expression here. So big phi, this is the standard normal distribution function, so that's its inverse here. Small phi is its derivative, so that's the standard normal density. And if you look at this explicit formula for the parameterization, it does use that this is between minus 1 and 0, because the argument of an inverse distribution function should be between 1 and 0, so we're using that. We're also dividing by this thing, but because this is strictly convex, the second derivative is strictly positive, so this is all well defined, and so is that. Now, you can say, okay, what's the point of looking at these quantities? And the point is this. So this is the second main result, which says, well, in words, it says, you can parametrize by these x, y. This gets you all the static arbitrage constraints, but nevertheless, this has an extremely nice state space. Okay, what's the precise formulation? Look at admissible option price models on the one hand. Look at all pairs x, y of processes x. X are positive things, y are real valued things, no real conditions on the state space. And then you have a bijection for each model of option prices which satisfies these admissibility conditions. There's a unique pair of local implied vols and price levels and vice versa. So you've mapped the nice option price models into new coordinates whose state space is as nice as it can be, and yet, because it captures exactly such admissible option price models, it captures via these explicit formulas, so you know exactly how to compute X and Y from the call prices and vice versa. It gives you any bijection between the two quantities. Which means you know what you can model. You can model X and Y. You specify the dynamics of this. Okay, so Wynne can also, but I will not dwell on that, given interpretation, why these are called local implied vols. We have explicit formula which relate the classical implied volatilities with these local implied volatilities. Also, if you look at the Black-Scholes model, then this local implied volatility is simply the standard volatility parameter, so it's an extension of what you get in Black-Scholes. And so what this means is we have solved this parametrization problem, so we can now, in the second step, think about constructing models for calls with multiple strikes. And that, of course, is then the next result. So we say, okay, the stock price, this is simply the call with strike zero. This we can express in terms of the Y index parameters by with this function. Call prices are recovered from X and Y simply by inverting this transformation by this formula. Okay, so we write down a model for X and Y, X non-negative, Y real-valued, just dynamic model for that, and we should make sure that the coefficients we choose for X and Y are such that this quantity and that quantity are all local martingales. Okay, so this gives drift restrictions, of course, on the STEs you can write down for X and Y. And, well, I mean, this you can give to any students. You say, okay, I give you a model for X and Y. What are the drifts you get for the stock and the calls? This is a nice exercise, lengthy but nice, an ETOS formula. So you write down the drift restrictions. And then you see, okay, suppose X is modeled like this, and I've done it directly in exponential form, because it should be non-negative, so you have a drift U and vol vol K. You have for the Y, which is the price level, the beta and the gamma as input, and then as usual here, this is specified in terms of the vol here and the market price of risk, plus some additional terms, and the U drift is also, if you look at this a bit from far away, this is determined once you specify the market price of risk and the vol vols, the V functions. And again, you have certain quantities, IV and I1 coming up, which are directly expressed in terms of your coefficients and of your basic quantities. So what you want is to say, okay, I'm allowed to specify my vol vol V, then this and this and this drift, these are all given. I want an existence result for an SDE system like that, and with a little bit of work, once you know how to do it, it's not that difficult. So you can again give sufficient conditions which give you existence and uniqueness of a solution. Again, this is not completely direct because, again, you only are allowed to choose the volatility but not the drift, but it can be done. So what we have achieved, we have existence, we have a tractable parameterization, we have examples, so this is still in the process of being reviewed, but we also hope it will come out fairly soon. Okay, so I'm coming towards the end, and this is the part which is really wide open. So there are plenty of problems. So one question is, okay, I've given you a solution and a parameterization for one extreme case, fixed strike, all maturities. I've given you a solution for fixed maturity, all strikes. How about the full option surface, all strikes, all maturities? We don't know. There's a recent paper by Carmona and Natocci, which gives a Schönbucher type model for the full option surface, but if you look at that paper, no existence. We don't know if a model like theirs actually exists. This is an open problem. We have at the moment no great idea of how we would practically implement this. We haven't done any numerics. Some new recent results by Johannes Wissel, which should come out fairly soon, look at the following problem. Okay, maybe the full option surface is too ambitious. Typically you have a finite number of strikes, finite number of maturities. Look at the pair of these, so you have a finite system. Find results for such a finite family, and he has results on that. He has a parameterization, he has existence results. This will come out soon, and I think this will be the most applicable part. We don't know anything about recalibration. We have been asked many times, is there something like a Markov property in some well-chosen variables? We don't know yet. Specific applications, well, we've done the theory. So basically the motto on that slide is, you name it, we don't know it. At least we don't know it yet. But I'm hoping for many good questions and suggestions for interesting problems or for relevant issues, for possible answers. So whatever you want to ask, please, we're open to that. So what is related? Okay, there's a Dupuy work with this local volatility model, but our criticism there is you don't have explicit formulas. You have a PDE for coal prices, which is fine when you want to compute things. You don't have joint dynamics. That's what we want. There is a model for variance swaps due to Hans Bühler, but this is a very special payoff. Basically, this is the log contract, and this payoff is so simple that the resulting infinite SDE system, you simply solve it explicitly. So that's not really a benchmark case. There's a recent work, but that's also more asymptotic, by Dolleman, which tells you how spot and applied vols are related, but this isn't the martingale modeling spirit. I already mentioned Carmona. Oops. Okay, so that was a... The space, okay. No, okay. Okay, so. Oh, okay, where is it? Okay, so I just got the wrong button, sorry. Okay, so I mentioned this paper by Carmona and Natocci, which actually goes back to Derman and Kahn, but again, no existence result. It's an idea for the parameterization, but no idea yet how this could be sort of treated properly. There's also related work by Jacot and Protter, but they basically just say, okay, basically there is a martingale approach, so they are able to show there exists some sort of volatility dynamics, but they can't write it down. They can't specify it. It's an output from their model. It's not an input. Okay, well, if you want references, you have a look at my homepage, or you have a look at the homepage of Johannes Wissel, or both. So you just Google my name or the name of Johannes Wissel, or you look at VPH, you will find it all there. Okay, just before I wrap up, here's a reminder. Don't forget the propaganda, the call for papers, special issue, and yeah, I think I'm just in time to stop, so thanks a lot for your attention, and I look forward to getting your questions.